As you know, it's important to me that the supplements I recommend and use are of the highest quality. That's why I stock the Protocol for Life Balance product line at my online dispensary, drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research, including a suite of supplements for digestive support, handle tougher digestive problems, and larger, more complex meals with GI Guard AM, enzymes HCL, oregano oil, and peppermint oil, GI. This premium collection may help to maintain the integrity of your stomach lining and promote gastric comfort, help reduce occasional bloating, indigestion, heartburn, gas, and other normal diet-related digestive disturbances, as well as maintain healthy intestinal flora balance. For more information and to order, just go to drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance is an A-rated GMP manufacturer of premium dietary supplements. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's my favorite time of the week, or I don't know, maybe not my favorite time of the week, because perhaps a close rival is when I get to do my weekend program, which is heard on Radio America, but also available to you via streaming, and also becomes a podcast on Mondays. So if you can't be where you have to be from noon to 2 p.m., on Saturdays, Eastern Time, no worries, because you'll be able to hear it as a podcast. So yeah, I enjoy that too, but I enjoy very much our weekly colloquy with Layla Mudin, who's our resident nutritionist. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good. Did you have a nice Labor Day?
Yes, it was great. The weather wasn't bad, and we were here for a few more days after the Labor Day holiday, which has been kind of nice.
And
to make
weather,
it last a little longer.
The weather was really superb.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was very clear blue skies, a rare situation where this time of year it was like 73 degrees, low humidity, because there was a north wind. We were getting sort of Canadian air. And
great sleeping weather at night.
Yeah, I took a beautiful swim out in the bay on Long Island this morning. The water was calm and... it was high tide and, you know, just a great end of summer experience.
Wonderful.
I'm ready to go.
The beach is always great.
Yep.
The water is always great.
Yep.
Love it here.
Mm-hmm. So no jellyfish, no sharks, though.
Oh, my gosh. Shark sightings. But the jellyfish can be something. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But, you know, when it's a little cooler, they don't swarm as much. So anyway, so here we be. And I wish all of you a belated happy Labor Day, and we're getting down to business. A lot of people going back to work, coming back from trips, getting the kids and grandkids ready for school.
Yeah.
There's a quickening in the air as we move into September. And then on top of that, it's an election year. So it's like, really, it's pretty nonstop excitement. So before we get to questions, by the way, how do we get people to send us questions?
Questions
at drhoffman.net.
.net.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So questions at drhoffman.net. I'm very happy to see that we have a mailbag full of questions to prime our conversations on this Q&A with Layla. But before we do that, I just wanted to comment on an interesting study because I, you know, please kind of long, quiet weekends, I catch up on my reading and relax, and inevitably I come across health stories. This one from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and it examines the proposition, do plant-based meat analogs, are they healthier in terms of cardiometabolic health? And, you know, of course, when we talk about cardiometabolic health, we talk about the risk factors for cardiovascular disease, cholesterol, and also blood sugar markers, you know, hemoglobin A1C, and even they looked at fructosamine, HDL, LDL quality, ApoB, C-reactive protein. They looked at a lot of different things. But low density lipoprotein cholesterol served as a primary outcome. And so LDL, that's like the culprit, they say.
Right.
Right.
That's what everybody's focused on.
So I don't know if you've seen this study, but, you know, take a guess as to the result of this study. So, I'll tell you how it was set up. It was an 8-week trial. Participants were instructed to substitute habitual protein-rich food with either plant-based meat analogs or corresponding animal-based meats. So 2.5 servings per day of either protein, and maintaining their intake of other dietary components. So they did it for 8 weeks, and then they retested them. They wanted to see, you know, how things were going. They also did 14 days of continuous glucose monitoring, which is kind of
good idea.
That's good. Good idea. And then,
I would want to know, Dr. Hoffman, what else did they eat?
Yeah, well, that's true, because it could have been like a crappy diet, you know, with or without. Yeah. But the outcome was this. The 8-week plant-based meat analog, you know, the Impossible Burger diet, basically.
Right. Beyond beef, all
Beyond
that.
Beef, all that stuff. Did not show widespread cardiometabolic health benefits compared with a corresponding meat-based diet.
Mm.
And so...
there we go.
Yeah. Big fail for, you know, ersatz meat. Because that the health claim, you know, there's twofold health claims. One is that it's better for the planet. That's a sell job right there. And the question is, you know, is it really, you know, can they demonstrate that? Because, you know, growing plants can be kind of resource intensive too.
Absolutely.
And, you know, water intensive and so on. On the other hand, you know, plants don't emit small amounts of methane in their flatulence, which is thought to contribute to climate change. Okay.
Is that called flower farts?
Flower farts. Yeah. Plants. I mean, maybe swamp, grass does that or something, you know, it's cause it's kind of smelly in the swamps.
That's true.
Yeah. But anyway, so that is, I think, a controversial proposition, because I think that the powers that be want to convert us to a very low animal protein diet. For the sake of the planet, and besides, they say it's healthier. Well, this kind of knocks out the contention that it's healthier. I also read a big article. You know, one of the family members I was with this weekend is really into tech, and he subscribes to a highfalutin magazine called the MIT Review, you know, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Review. And it's got a bunch of articles that are, you know, beyond my ken in technology and, you know, whatever. But this one was a practical one. It was about the cultured meat. In other words, the idea that we can take big vats of animal cells and just kind of grow them in a vat.
Yeah.
And it was a little chilling, because they're very gung ho on that technology.
Oh my gosh!
And right now, it's super uncost effective. It costs 20 times as much, you know, to grow.
These are like called biological reactors.
Exactly.
Nuclear reactors. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And so they look at the environmental impact of this. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, they said, well, it might be environmentally friendly, but on the other hand, it might not be, because it takes so much energy to run these reactors. And it's not yet clear that it is a net benefit, but nonetheless, they're plunging ahead with this technology. I could tell that there are huge conglomerates. Some of the big food manufacturers are way into developing this. And this is going to be, you know, Soylent Green kind of thing.
Oh, no.
Coming to a table near you.
Terrible. It's enough that we see even on restaurant menus lately, Beyond Beef Burger or All Vegan Type Impossible Burger, things like that. And I've looked at the ingredients and I've not seen any changes having revisited that whole thing. should talk about it a little more again on podcasts.
Gee,
because
I think
the ingredients are very worrying.
Yeah, I think here's the problem. I was a vegetarian, but I kind of missed meat, and occasionally I would, you know, for Thanksgiving I would have like a tofurkey. You know, it was like
right.
meat envy, you know, and it was
yes.
terrible. It was like sort of a compressed blob of soy, you know, protein shaped
yeah.
into the shape of roughly of a turkey. And it's just awful. But the stuff that I ate that was vegetarian, mostly, you know, rice and beans, tofu, that at least was not ultra processed. But
yes.
when you get into this thing where, oh, I'm a vegetarian, but I kind of like the taste of a hamburger now and then, and I'm going to have a ersatz hamburger. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that whole proposition is kind of hypocritical.
It is. And it's even made to look a little bloody, if you will.
Yeah.
With the amount of beets they're using or something. And it's like...
They use something called hemagglutinin. Hemagglutinin. They breed the soy to have a higher percentage of hemagglutinin. And hemagglutinin sounds a lot like hemoglobin, and it's like bright
yes.
red, but it's it's actually a GMO ingredient that's kind of dialed into the DNA of the soy so that the soy looks bloody.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Frankenfood.
Yeah.
It's all right. Yeah, we will see how all of this plays out. But I understand there are some very big donors lined up. We're already supporting, you know, like.
But I would ask you, you're in the nutrition community, and do you feel that there's a lot of pressure or acceptance among registered dietitians to promote this kind of stuff? And are the magazines you're reading, do you get kind of hit up with propaganda on that?
No, I'm not seeing a lot of talk about that on listservs, although on one of the listservs, which I found interesting, there was one particular dietitian who just kept pushing plant-based. And then I saw some other dietitians, a small handful, that would push back and say, yeah, that was debunked.
Okay.
Why are you talking? Yeah. So I'm really proud of my colleague.
There's an emerging consciousness. Yeah. And thinking independently and not feeling...
using our critical thinking skills, not being pushed by some kind of agenda
exactly.
to, hey, well, let's get rid of all the meat.
Well, there's just a lot of money behind this. But I have to say that if you are an investor and you got real excited about, Beyond Meat, you know, the investors in that company have just taken a licking because it's one of those like sentimental things. Like, I'm real excited about this. I'm going to put my money into it and, you know, it's going to take off. And that was wishful thinking because there's the public acceptance falls far short of the projections.
True. True. Yeah. So we are watching all this play out and it's interesting. American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, you know, one of the more renowned journals bringing this to light that, guess what? It's not better for metabolic health. So there we go. For starters, there we go.
And I recently, by the way, just took apart an article on my recent radio program about how meat is associated with a higher risk of diabetes. It's a preposterous study.
It is.
And, you know, even someone who's very conservative in this field, who's, you know, not necessarily as aligned with an omnivorous diet or a carnivore or a low-carb paradigm as we are. Peter Attia, whose podcast I listened to, did a really nice takedown of that study and how ridiculous it was to try and make the assertion that on the basis of this study that, you know, because there was a 10% higher risk of diabetes among meat eaters, that we should completely revise our nutrition policy and get with a plant-based agenda. Because it's not the meat. I mean, it's preposterous. The meat doesn't cause diabetes. It's excess carbs.
Absolutely. It's the bun on the hamburger, everybody.
Yeah.
It's the fries with your steak or anything else that's going on.
But, you know, hey, if you eat a, you know, like a Big Mac with cheese and, you know, a big order of fries, In this study, you would be listed as a meat eater.
Yes.
You would be listed as a meat eater.
And the giant soda.
Right. And the soda.
Big gulp.
Right.
You were still listed as a meat eater.
You're
the smoker.
Right.
The nightly beer drinker.
Right.
You're listed as a meat eater.
Right.
Yeah. It's the cigar smoker.
Right. In fairness, they controlled for a couple of things. They controlled for weight. They controlled for smoking. But there's so many other variables in terms of health habits that are associated with meat consumption that it's hard to, I mean, it's unwarranted to draw the conclusion that we should all reduce our intake of meat to reduce the risk of diabetes. That's not the case. So anyway, have you had your hemoglobin A1C checked lately? Have you?
I have.
And?
Oh, well, actually not lately. It was February of 23. It was a 5.3. Yeah, I wasn't happy with that. Like it at 5.
Yeah, mine was 4.9. So, like, and
oh, excellent.
And I can't tell you how much the way of animal protein
that's
I've
great.
Consumed. Yeah,
but, that's great.
Yeah, 5.3 is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's an A minus as opposed to
right. You know, yeah, I guess
yeah,
B plus. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway. So, okay, let's get to questions. So actually, before we get to questions, let's take care of some business.
Yes.
TCB, mm-hmm. Taking care of business every day.
Every day.
Yeah. All right. We'll get to one of our announcements on behalf of one of our sponsors. They, of course, are What Make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. So let's hear it. Listen up.
Are you tired? Are you frequently in a state of fatigue? It might surprise you to learn that your cellular health begins to decline as early as 25 years of age. As you age, your cell membranes start to become like Swiss cheese. This cellular damage is the primary cause of biological aging. It could be the root of your fatigue. But there's a breakthrough supplement that's scientifically proven to repair and renew your body's cells. NT-factor lipids. NT-factor lipids are identical to the phospholipids found in your cellular membranes. NT-Factor is the only solution proven and published in medical journals to repair those dead spots in the membranes. If you're older, it can give you back the vitality, focus, and cognitive function of people half your age. And if you're young, this is the tool to optimize your energy production. I've been using NT-Factor for years and prescribe it for my patients. Learn more about the NT-Factor line of nutritional formulas at your favorite health food store or online retailer, or to order direct, call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Okay, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now let's get to questions. Questions come to questions at drhoffman.net. Let's hear it.
Okay. We've got one from Chris. Dr. Hoffman, I have a question about the use of Desinex powder. I've been using this powder every morning for over a decade, as my dermatologist recommended, the 2% miconazole formula to control jock itch and athlete's foot. This has worked perfectly, but I read that the use of talcum powder could cause cancer with the recent Johnson & Johnson talc powder settlement. Do mm-hmm. I need to be concerned with the use of Desinex powder? I'm not sure if there's any talc in Desinex, or if this is the same formulation as what was in the Johnson & Johnson lawsuit.
Right. Well, the connection between talc and cancer is mostly around women.
Asbestos.
And
women, yeah.
And specifically, the irritant may be the talc itself, because it is a kind of a small particle, and small particles, when taken into the lungs, can be an irritant in and of themselves. Or, mm-hmm. you know, if you apply them around your privates as a woman, you know, there's mm-hmm. a pathway up into your ovaries.
Yeah.
And the thought was there was an association between the use of talc mm-hmm. and ovarian cancer. Now, the science behind that is controversial, I've got to say. And the Johnson & Johnson agreed to a settlement without an admission of culpability. So mm-hmm. I think there was some kind of whatever, you know, non-disclosure, payout, blah, blah, blah. It is not clear that it is really a cause of ovarian cancer. as is so often the case when, you know, like somebody who uses, you know, Roundup in their garden and they come down with lymphoma. Well, how many people come down with lymphoma? And could be due to any number of things, but, you know, you could make the case that there, you know, it's been documented that that can cause lymphoma in landscapers who use a lot of glyphosate, who are saturated in it. So, you know, there's going to be aggressive plaintiff's attorneys who are going to enlist people for class action suits. And then ultimately, there usually is a settlement.
Yeah.
So, big, you know, big pot of money that they throw out there. And that's actually been kind of a dent in this big company, J&J. They've had to, you know, pay out multi-million dollar settlement around this. Okay, so what is talc? Talc is something that's mined. And it is, as a result of being mined, it may contain some asbestos, because asbestos occurs in some talc, but not all talc. And the what really nailed Johnson & Johnson is kind of like what nailed the cigarette makers, because they had information that they concealed that suggested that asbestos in talc could be carcinogenic. I'm a little bit more worried about, you know, people like apply this and there's like a big cloud of talc, you know, in the bathroom and if, you know, it covers your bathroom counter and you inhale it and I'm,
you're inhaling it.
I'm a little bit more worried about that. I think as a result, they are very stringent about the asbestos content of, if there's even any real talc in what's so-called talcum powder. Mostly, I think most of these products are now cornstarch. It's a, there are various types of drying agents. I think that talc is kind of passe. And in a male, it's much less of a concern because it's, it doesn't have a pathway to get internally unless you
breathe it. The root in is not an invagination.
Right. Exactly.
We may call it that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, now, this product Desinex is a, it does two things. It's got an antifungal ingredient, as well as it's a drying agent. And so I tell patients who have jock itch, you know, the first question I ask is like, well, how much do you shower or bathe? You know, they kind of, they take umbrage at that. Oh, no, I'm very fastidious about showering and bathing. I shower twice daily, or I take a bath, you know, every day. And I go, no, don't do that. Because in effect, what you're doing, you know, you're, your skin is kind of like a raincoat, and it's got a protective layer of usually sebum and oils, and it even has a microbiome. And when you just wash it away with detergent, which is what soap is, and you kill off the microbiome, you render yourself, and it's moist on top of that, because, I mean, how many times have you taken a shower quickly and you've not been quite dry?
You know,
You kind of throw a robe on and you air dry, you know.
Right. And listen, and those with a lot of pubic hair, body hair, you need to dry that. You may need to take a hair dryer. That.
I know.
Yes.
So please set it on low, please.
Set it on low and set it on cool. Don't hold it so close. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, so the product is perfectly fine. But, you know, the other point is, you know, this questioner I happen to know is, you know, from a previous question, is diabetic. And so I think that the risk is always higher when blood sugar is higher. And therefore, to people who get repeated fungal infections, I say, you know, try and keep your blood sugar well controlled. But, you know, when you're this is a type 1 diabetic. So he really achieves very good blood sugar control. But, you know, a type 1 diabetic is going to have some times where their blood sugar is a little elevated. Yeah. That's friendly to fungi.
Yes.
And
fungi love sugar.
And, you know, so for example, I've known women in my practice who they would get yeast infections just from eating too much fruit.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Especially things like cantaloupe, which is notorious. It's true.
So a higher sugar load is very friendly to fungal growth.
True. Okay. All right. Next time I'm in the local CVS, I'm going to have to go look at Desinex powder and read ingredients. Oh, what are they using?
Yeah, give us eyeball it, okay? Because
yeah, I will.
Yeah. I think that they're, because of that huge lawsuit of class action, I think we're getting away from that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine anybody making any of these products have an eye on what's happening there and their own liability. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Chris, thank you for this very thoughtful question. Okay. Let's see here. We've got a question from Kathy. Kathy writes, hello, Dr. Hoffman. My daughter has a continual red flush neck. She also has lost a lot of hair. She works two jobs. Oh my. And takes melatonin to sleep soundly. Are stress nerves her problem?
Okay.
If those are two full-time jobs,
yeah.
I would venture a guess saying yes, absolutely.
Well, you know, stress can affect your hair and stress can affect the skin, but I would not.
Yeah.
See, the thing about stress, it's always a convenient whipping boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you start to develop certain symptoms, you kind of can attribute it to stress. And then it only makes the stress worse because then you say, oh my God, my hair's falling out. It's the stress. And every time you were stressed, you think, oh my goodness, I'm going to lose more hair. And it becomes a vicious cycle of worry and fear. So we got to be careful about that. I'm going to share a story that I heard recently of this is actually from an acquaintance. And someone who I see sometimes on Facebook. And, you know, I hadn't seen her for many years. And then I saw her on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, my goodness, she's really changed. She's really changed. And I said to myself, I said, she must be taking steroids. She must be taking steroids. But I didn't reach out to her because she's just an acquaintance and, you know, it's none of my business, right? It's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, what am I going to do? Say, hey, I saw you on Facebook, you look fat. You know, it's...
oh, my goodness.
It's none of my business, right? But so I recently, you know, months later, I spoke to a relative of hers, and he said she's been diagnosed with Cushing's disease, which is a condition where the adrenals overproduce a stress hormone that makes your hair thin and your
cortisol.
Hair can fall out. And you can also have weight gain and mm-hmm. high blood pressure. And mm-hmm. they missed the diagnosis for months. Now,
wow.
I feel a little remiss because I could have said, like, you need a medical workup. But, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. how much intrusiveness do you want when you have a picture on, you know, in social media?
Exactly.
You know, so you have to be careful with that. And, you know, I would get a complete medical workup to see if there's things going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would also see a dermatologist around the hair because there may be and certainly about the rash, right?
Yes, the continual red flush neck.
Red flush neck. Well, you know, I would say if there was a facial rash, I would be concerned about something like lupus and autoimmune disease.
Yeah.
But that red neck is not per se characteristic of lupus. It's possible, but.
Yeah. Interesting. So, okay.
So, I mean, and by the way, we had a discussion.
We actually
previewed the questions and we did talk about what is a, you know, the term redneck. Redneck is, it originated with, it applied to Southerners, right? Caucasian Southerners mm-hmm. who were racist, right? But there was a reason that they had rednecks. Well, first of all, they spent a lot of time out in the sun and they had light skin.
Yep.
But they also subsisted on a diet of bacon
mm-hmm.
And lots of grits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, I guess bacon is a source of niacin, vitamin B3, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
but
it's definitely a source of thiamine, B1. It's
okay.
Definitely a source of that.
So they didn't have beriberi, but they might have had pellagra.
Pellagra.
Which is vitamin B3 deficiency, and vitamin B3 deficiency can cause the 4 Ds, You know them, right? Which are
diarrhea, dementia. I know the last one is death.
And dermatitis.
Dermatitis. Thank you.
The redneck. Yeah. But why dementia is that, you know, you can actually, it affects the brain. It affects the brain, you know, niacin deficiency.
Yeah.
So maybe there was a reason why you had like a lot of ignorant rednecks because they had pellagra and it affected their brains. So they weren't too smart. They had rednecks.
Right. And if she is low in B vitamins, that may also contribute to hair loss. Maybe biotin is a factor, but certainly stress. Kathy, your daughter needs a workup. And hello, working two jobs. If those two jobs are full-time, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd lose a lot of hair too.
But, you know, a lot of people kind of have, you know, they had sort of pastiche their careers together with multiple jobs these days, you know. So
that's true. I'm only assuming when I hear works two jobs, two full-time jobs, when do you sleep?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Kathy. Best of luck to your daughter. All right.
Okay, good time to flip over to side two, because we divide our podcast into two parts. And Layla, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
I lost about 20 pounds counting calories. I didn't want to gain it back, so now I count the calories needed to not gain it back. I want to lose a little more weight, so I'm going to continue counting calories to lose weight.
Okay. Well, let's tackle that question, because I think it brings up a very, very important theme in nutrition.
It does.
You know, is it calories or is it food types that are associated with susceptibility to weight gain?
The Talk types of calories, right.
When we return. Yeah. Is it quantity or quality? I think that's what it boils down to. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and you're listening to our weekly Q&A with Layla. And we'll be back with more in just a moment.